Welcome to Journal Club for January 25th, 2025. I'm Malcolm Diggs. In May 2022, Miriam Daniel, the VP of Google Maps, wrote a blog post on the company's website. In it, she previewed a new technology that would be rolling out across their systems over the next few years. Immersive View. With Immersive View, users could, in her words, virtually soar over a neighborhood. Not with a top-down view, but with a 360-degree rotatable field of vision. It would be, as the name implies, fully immersive. The entire landscape of the city would be recreated in 3D, not just to allow you predefined angles and perspectives as Google Earth had done, but a truly customizable experience. You could potentially view any landscape from any position and any perspective, and even any time of day. Over the next few years, the scope of Immersive View would grow. By February 2023, Immersive View was available for individual places, not just specific large cities, but smaller areas too, down to individual local businesses. You could walk inside of a business and view it in 3D, even if nobody had ever taken photos of it with a 360-degree camera or not. Somehow, that no longer seemed to matter. By October of that year, the feature rolled out to routes and directions, allowing you to visualize every step of your route from the street or the sky or a sidewalk nearby. How were they doing this? How is this possible? It's not like they had sent out an order of magnitude more street view cars in the last few years. It's not like they were strapping cameras to pigeons, so how were they getting all of these 360-degree angles for streets and places and indoor venues all over the world all at once? To answer that question, we need to go back a few years earlier. It was the summer of 2020, and the organizers of the European Conference on Computer Vision had a problem. Namely, that it was summer 2020. They had been planning this conference to take place in Glasgow, and it was a big deal. They had received over 5,000 submissions and carefully whittled them down to 1,300 papers, but now it was looking like lockdown was going to last far longer than anyone had imagined, and the entire thing was going to have to be canceled. Instead, they took it online. And during this makeshift online conference, where hundreds and hundreds of papers were presented from their authors' bedrooms and kitchens and home offices, one paper stood out. It was called NERF, Representing Scenes as Neural Radiance Fields for View Synthesis. The paper was a collaboration between UC Berkeley, Google Research, and UC San Diego, and had been released on Archive earlier that year. But it was at this conference that it really made a splash. This paper showed how you could generate high-quality 3D visual content from normal 2D images. No 360-degree cameras needed, no LiDAR, no depth sensors, no specialized equipment. A collection of normal photos goes in, a 3D reconstruction comes out. Traditional 3D reconstruction techniques often rely on explicit geometric representations, such as point clouds, meshes, or voxel grids. This new idea they presented, NERF, Neural Radiance Fields, represents a scene implicitly using a neural network that encodes the complex interplay of light, materials, and spatial structure in a continuous function. This function maps a 3D spatial coordinate and a 2D viewing direction to corresponding color and density values, effectively capturing the scene's volumetric properties in a highly compact form. By leveraging the neural network's ability to learn complex patterns, NERF can reconstruct intricate scene details and realistic lighting effects that traditional methods struggle to achieve. At the core of NERF's rendering process is a technique called volume rendering, which allows for the synthesis of novel views by simulating how light travels through the scene. In NERF, a virtual camera is placed at a desired viewpoint, and rays are cast from each pixel in the image plane into the 3D scene. Along each ray, the network samples multiple points in 3D space and predicts their color and opacity based on the learned representation. These values are then accumulated along the ray, with closer points contributing more to the final pixel color, while distant points fade into the background. This accumulation process accurately models complex visual phenomena, so it can handle things like occlusions, transparency, and reflections. This allows it to create highly realistic renderings. One of its key strengths is its ability to achieve high fidelity with sparse input data, so it doesn't need a ton of input photos. Another strength is that since Nerf models the scene continuously rather than discreetly, it can generate smooth transitions between viewpoints. This makes it particularly useful for virtual reality and visual effects. While Google had helped produce the research paper, it wasn't 100% clear at first that Nerf was actually the technology they were using for immersive view. But in a follow-up blog post in 2023, they confirmed it. This was it. Under the hood, the immersive view they had been rolling out was Nerf. Since then, Nerf has been used by game developers, effect studios, architectural firms, e-commerce platforms, archaeologists, and more. And importantly, it has been used in situations that require a higher resolution, a more accurate 3D representation than a Google Map does. These are things like medical imaging and cultural heritage preservation, where pixel-level accuracy is important. And as developers have begun to use it for those use cases, they've run into a number of issues. Issues like spatial misalignment due to camera pose estimation errors, the presence of artifacts such as floaters, which are extraneous 3D elements appearing in free space, and distorted shapes and flickering edges. So a need has emerged for a set of tools and systems that can systematically evaluate Nerf-synthesized images, grade them on visual fidelity, geometric accuracy and perceptual quality, and identify areas that need to be improved or corrected to enhance realism and consistency. And that's where today's paper comes in. The authors argue that existing methods and techniques aren't up to the task. They're too simplistic, inconsistent, and not tailored to Nerf-specific artifacts. They're not able to capture subtle distortions or account for spatial misalignments in the way that developers need for this use case. So the authors are creating an alternative. They have constructed a framework for a more comprehensive Nerf quality assessment. It's split into two halves, the subjective evaluations and the objective evaluations. The subjective evaluations assess the perceived visual quality of the images and videos by gathering human opinions. The idea is that human perception can capture subtle artifacts and inconsistencies that automated metrics might overlook. The authors use a double stimulus continuous quality scale methodology for this. In this approach, participants are shown two versions of a scene side by side, one being the reference or ground truth, and the other being the synthesized output generated by Nerf. Participants then rate the quality of both videos using labels like bad, good, etc., which are later converted to numerical scores. To help ensure reliability, they implemented outlier detection methods to remove inconsistent responses and applied statistical significance tests to validate the robustness of the findings. The final scores were aggregated to produce difference mean opinion scores, which measure the perceived difference in quality between the reference and synthesized content. Higher values indicate better synthesis quality, while lower values suggest significant visual discrepancies. So what about the objective evaluations? How are those different? The objective system assesses the quality of the images using two subcategories of metrics. Full reference metrics, which compare synthesized images against corresponding reference images, and learning-based metrics, which leverage deep learning models to predict perceptual quality based on learned features. The goal here was to quantify the accuracy and realism of the content. They used a number of techniques for this. Peak signal-to-noise ratio, structural similarity index, multi-scale SSIM, and learned perceptual image patch similarity. Additionally, more advanced video-oriented metrics such as FOV Video VDP and Video Multi-Method Assessment Fusion were included to account for temporal artifacts and motion quality. One of the key challenges in the objective evaluation is spatial misalignment caused by inaccuracies in camera pose estimation. To address this, the authors introduced a disparity compensation step, which corrects for spatial shifts between the reference and synthesized images before applying the quality metrics. This step improves the reliability of the evaluation by ensuring that misalignment artifacts do not skew the quality scores. In their evaluation pipeline, the authors processed both real and synthetic scenes across a number of different view types. Each synthesized image was compared against its corresponding ground truth reference image using the selected quality metrics I mentioned earlier, and the results were aggregated to provide an overall quality score. They also used a statistical significance test to determine the reliability of the metrics and their correlation with human perception. Overall, the system presented here is not a product or a piece of software. It's a framework, a toolkit. The authors have proposed it and done enough light evaluations that they feel comfortable putting it forward, but it's up to all of us as practitioners to find out if it actually works in the real world or not. Their preliminary results were mixed. The framework excelled in some areas, like assessing synthetic scenes with well-defined structures, but struggled in others, like handling real-world scenes with complex backgrounds and lighting variations. But who knows what those results will translate to in the wild? Ultimately, this paper lays a foundation that more research will need to put to the test and build upon. This is an early step in the process of obtaining more reliable and standardized assessment techniques. If it's successful, it can help drive broader adoption of radiance fields across more industries and use cases. If you'd like to dive into this paper more deeply, please do download the PDF. Thank you for joining me on today's episode of Journal Club. Hope you enjoyed it. Malcolm Diggs signing off. See you tomorrow.